Chapter 41. The Bucket, the Bat, and the Broken Glass. Sidney Grice came over.
What have you found?
I kneeled. A doll. The plinth had fallen against the edge of a rockery so that it lay tilted about 30 degrees from the ground. I drew back my hand. It must be Freddy's, the one she talked about.
Possibly,
he conceded.
Stand clear.
Mr. G bent at the knees and, keeping his back straight, ran his fingers under the propped-up end of the stone. The other end was submerged under a heavy net of undergrowth. He braced himself and strained, the wiry roots ripping as he wrenched the plinth, soil scattering, a herbaceous periwinkle torn from the ground with it, violet-blue flowers tumbling away. He was a small man and not sturdily built, but he had great strength. Can I help? I stepped forward.
You most certainly can.
My guardian's face was purple.
But you most certainly shall not.
He heaved with all his might, his neck muscles about to burst his starched collar, and the plinth hinged up, reached the near vertical and, with one final strain, toppled diagonally into the long grass of a shallow depression. Mr. G breathed and rotated his shoulders.
What a world exists beneath our feet!
He massaged his right upper arm. And, craning over him, I glimpsed a myriad of woodlice scurrying for cover, a fat earthworm contracting indignantly, centipedes and millipedes writhing, tiny round white eggs, a spindle-legged spider strutting its suddenly sunlit domain. The doll was uncovered now, fine porcelain lying supine on the soil, her face towards me, politely listening to our conversation. A few shredded strips of dark dress material were draped around her waist and legs. A disgustingly swollen slug slid lazily over her chest. She must have been pretty once. Her left eye was closed, but the other still glinted through a layer of dust and long, curling lashes. Her cheeks were rosy and her lips deep ruby despite the earwig ambling in the valley between them. And she had thick, cascading hair which I had no doubt would be golden if it were washed. One of the reasons I never liked dolls, for not only were they pretty, but they always looked like they knew it. The only damage I could see was a crater in her left temple, big enough to put 2 or 3 fingers in, and for the large garden snail that had made its home in it.
Broken,
Mr. G observed, rather obviously for him. Are you surprised after it was in a fire, fell so far, and was crushed by a block of granite? I pulled a twig from her hair. My guardian polished his eye on his sleeve, and then on a scarlet cloth from his satchel.
For your benefit, I should have said only broken.
He reinserted his eye, and it was limestone. He wiped his hands on a blue handkerchief. The doll's body was chilled from more than a decade in the shadows, and most of the remnants of her dress fell away as I picked her up. In the hollow left by her body, countless creatures burrowed from the light. I shook the dirt out, thin black beetles scattering with it, and her right eye sprang open, sapphire blue, sparkling in the August sun. The snail's shell was empty. The doll was too big to fit with all the other paraphernalia inside my handbag, so I wiped her down and sat her on top of everything else, her arms over the side of the bag as if she were taking a bath.
Come, March.
He gave me his hand to help me to my feet, and kept holding mine until we were back on level ground. Thank you, I said, touched by his unusual concern.
I should not like you to fall and sprain or fracture your wrist or ankle, he told me, or burst your nose or crack a rib or concuss yourself on something harder than your skull. It would be almost irritating.
We reached the house again where his cane stood against a section of wall which was still papered, though stained. What is the trowel for? I asked.
Troweling, he replied. Where was the main staircase?
I surveyed the wreckage. Over there, I decided, by the central chimney stack. There are the parts of some treads sticking out of the wall, and you can see the marks where the rest would have been inserted. It must have gone straight up. I counted the bricks. about 4 steps to a small mezzanine before it split to the left and right. I can almost make out the rectangular areas where they must have collapsed.
Either you can make them out or you cannot, Mr. G said shortly, and I narrowed my eyes.
I can just about, but the outlines are not clear.
That which is clear, he screwed the trowel onto the ferrule of his cane, is very often not.
Patented? I inquired of his device.
Pending.
Sidney Grice leaned forward, shoveling an inch-thick layer of debris aside.
No sign of any rot or woodworm yet, he decided,
and tapped the exposed floorboard.
And, despite being American, the oak sounds solid enough.
He stepped over the wall. Be careful, I warned, and my guardian snorted as he inched away.
According to Biedberger's prolix 1877 edition of A Study of Social Converse in the Western Home Counties, that is the 4th most common piece of advice given by women to men.
Mr. G raised his right leg, like a strutting cockerel.
In my experience, it is the 17th, but then most women I have come across would not be distressed.
He placed his heel with great precision.
In fact, they would be delighted if anything adverse happened to me.
He lowered his toe.
Pay particular heed to the next event.
A sheet of broken glass shattered under his sole. Was that it? Sidney Grice went down on his haunches.
Yes.
And scooped a curved sliver of glass and 3 samples of speckled dust into 4 test tubes to tuck them into the special tiny pockets in the canary lining of his coat. Shall I pay less particular heed from now on? My guardian rose in that effortless hydraulic power company way of his, and leaned on his front foot to test the next section.
I expect so.
He edged further out. What is that? I pointed to a metal pipe sticking out of the debris, and he shuffled sideways towards it.
A splendid tribute to English steel manufacturing.
He pulled out the shaft of a garden shovel, with all but a stump of the wooden handle burned away.
Discoloured by heat, but otherwise in excellent condition.
Sidney Grice turned it this way and that. But why would it be in here? I pondered. He put it back down.
If I were in the mood for speculation, I might cobble together a theory, but I shall leave you to work one out.
Thank you. I swept out my hand in a mock bow. Mr. G stepped over a mound and stumbled. Be careful, I cried, adding hastily. I'm sorry, that slipped out.
Babbage, with his difference engine, would have been hard-pressed to calculate the number of words that escape unchecked from your lank throat.
Sidney Grice bent to toss 2 bricks and several smaller fragments aside and dug in with his trowel.
The boards are distinctly less solid here, he announced. Not through the actions of insects, nor mould, nor rodents, as far as I can ascertain at a glance, but as a result of aqueous precipitation tending to pool in this area.
I shall not repeat my advice, I promised.
It might be more pertinent now.
He took another step and wobbled.
If this gives way, and I die, I have left instructions in my study regarding the disposal of my corpse, filed under NDM for National Day of Mourning.
Only 1 day?
More would be vulgar.
There was a loud crack, and he tipped sideways.
A prudent man might make a retreat, and I may be discovered in that category.
Mr. G jumped back over the pile just as it slid forwards in a miniature landslide. The floor where he had been standing collapsed, and the rubble crashed through a crater 5 or 6 feet in diameter, clattering into the cellar and exploding into dust. Are you all right? Sidney Grice coughed.
Of course.
He wafted the air with his wide-brimmed hat and peered into the precipice at his feet.
Well, that was stimulating.
Will you come back now? I begged.
I shall return,
he vowed,
but not immediately.
He stuck out his left leg and tested a joist. You are not thinking, I began as he slid his foot along.
Thinking and doing, he said. Hush.
My guardian placed his other foot on the beam, but I could not see through the clouds of dust whether it sagged or not. He extended his cane to some 6 feet or so and held it horizontally, as I had seen in a photograph of Blondin crossing the Niagara Falls.
"What are you doing?" I demanded.
Mr. G turned his head to look back at me, and I wished he had not, for he wobbled alarmingly.
"I believe that hush is generally recognized as an injunction to hold one's tongue, but, since you are asking, I am crossing a 7-foot-4-inch wide chasm by means of a conveniently affixed oaken beam."
"But why?"
"Because it is too far for me to jump from a standing start."
I decided that it was safer to let him concentrate on the task in hand. His shortened right leg did not make his task any easier, and he tipped worryingly every time he put his weight on it. At last he neared the other side.
"The floor does not look robust enough to support me," he announced, and dipped so suddenly that I thought he had fallen.
"Be careful!"
I squeaked before I could stop myself, but Mr. G gave no sign of having heard me. He was on one knee, his cane balanced across the beam, and rooting around in his satchel. He had his knife out, and seemed to be scraping at a broken board jutting from the other side, a foot or two over the abyss. I could hear scratching noises, but he had his back to me, and all I could see was his arm going to and fro. A test tube appeared and disappeared.
"Intriguing,"
my godfather said, and got to his feet, reversing cautiously as he avoided the projecting rusty nail heads.
"Shall I come and help?"
I offered.
"You shall not."
But I had already hitched up my skirts and stepped into the house. The floor felt less solid than I had expected as I tried to follow my guardian's footsteps. The rubble shifted, and I was glad I had my parasol to steady me. I could see the side of his face as I rounded the mound.
"Get back!"
He froze.
"What is it?"
I had been with my guardian when people had died in unspeakable agony, but had never seen such a look of horror on his face. It drained of blood in an instant, and his right eye fell, unheeded, bouncing off a lathe and clinking on the cellar floor far below.
"Underneath the beam,"
he gasped.
"Bats. Dozens of them."
I craned my neck and saw them. He had not exaggerated their numbers, for the whole joist was thick with them, clinging to the undersurface, rats wrapped in leather wings.
96 at a glance, he calculated.
But why did they not fly away when their ceiling broke and all the light flooded in? I wondered.
Perhaps you would like to write a paper on the motivations of Chiroptera,
he suggested acidly.
I can wait here whilst you equip yourself with the requisite materials.
I believe they are dead, I proposed. Bats' feet lock so that they do not fall from their perches when they are asleep. And the same holds true when they have died.
Mr. G shivered. I did not know you were such an expert.
He took another careful step back, and one more until he was within a foot of the edge. Something twitched under the floor close to the plank he had examined.
Close your eye,
I shouted.
What?
But for once Sidney Grice did as he was told. He crossed his arms defensively in front of his face, and a solitary bat shook itself free, flying up through the hole, rising through the dust, swooping around his head, and I knew that if he sensed it swirling about him like a moth near a lamppost, my guardian would fall. I darted towards him, flailing with my parasol, and caught him on the upper arm.
What are you doing?
He demanded.
Defending you.
Do not tell me from what, he begged.
I had never known him so helpless, this man who faced death with a calmness that would do credit to a regiment of guards. I waved my parasol again, and the bat whirled away.
You are safe now, I said.
Sidney Grice opened his eye, swiveled, and took hold of the end of my parasol, and I led him like a blind man off that beam, back across the floor, through the window, and out of Steep House.